Mr. Macmillan, Reel 4. Can you take me now through some of the things that you've mentioned? For example, seamanship classes. What were you learning there?
Well, seamanship classes was like the points of the compass, which I found out later on when I went to sea. When I went to sea, you didn't steer by the compass. You steered by a magnetic tape on a destroyer. I suppose the compass was handy. Seamanship, going out in the whaler. I think there was 12 of you went, 6 either side, with your instructor. And which, now I know it was hard work, because you had many blisters. You're relieved to get back after an hour at that, I can tell you. Rope work.
Those would be the various knots.
Learning knots, splicing and that sort of thing. You had a certain amount of flag hoisting. Not a lot, because it didn't come into the seaman category a great deal. Just learning the sort of basic things that you'd have got in the ship about steering is not the proper word for the Navy, is it? And how to ring up revolutions on a, you know, stop, slower,
general ship's routine, would that describe it?
Well, generalship as regards a seaman, how to launch the whaler. You didn't have anything to do with boiler rooms or that, because that was stokers. Or gearing rooms, that was ERAs, they went to a different one. It was just mostly a real rough idea of seamanship before you left the boys' training ship to go onwards to be a seaman and an able seaman before you went to the proper barracks, let's say.
Did they teach you any of the history of the Navy?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, at times you got rather sick of it. You know, what Nelson would do, or what some... I mean, the days of chain, I mean, they forget that those were days of sail, we were days of steam. But it's still... you were still taught. You got a damn good education, you know, with the Navy. Although... You were still learnt geography and mathematics, and not, you weren't, that wasn't put to one side. You still continued with your education, because who knows, some of those boys probably went on to be officers, and they had to learn things, you know.
And you had examinations to pass, had you?
Yes, you passed from boy seaman to boy first class. And then from there, I don't know what happened to the seaman branch, because by then, I had gone over to the communications.
So the examinations were based on what you'd already been taught?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, I suppose some of them boys, for all I know, could have come on and been commanding officers.
Were you taught ship's routine in the sense of what various watches were and what they...
Yes, you were taught, obviously, port, starboard, quarter deck, forecastle, anchor work. You had the old lead line that you slung out, and by the mark, they used to shout to the bridge for the depth of the water and that. Don't ask me what they were, because I can't remember them now. You were taught how to handle a rifle, which was the old rifles are damn heavy.
The 303 would be.
And the bolt always got caught in your shoulder. You always had a mark on your shoulder, you know. And you had drill with that. You had gunnery classes. You had a couple of guns there. You know.
What size were they, you recall?
I think... I'm not sure, but I think they were... about 6-inch. But you only done the elementary there. You done the most of it when you either went to a seaman to the gunnery school.
And you say elementary, just what was basic gunnery?
Basic gunnery, I didn't do a great deal of it because I was changing over, was lay and train, elevation, depression, how to put the shell on the whatever the tray, and then the cord that behind it, and how to put it up, and how you rammed it up the muzzle. I never done any actual firing, but they always said when they fire, watch when the cordite case is ejected, which there was a thing behind the gun stopped, like a rope thing. I don't know what they called it.
But this was just basic, as you say, very very elementary. Yes.
Oh yes, it was really.
And you mentioned drilling with the rifle. Presumably you did foot drills as well as part of the training.
Oh.
On the parade ground.
Yeah. You know, when you first start, left turn and all that, well, sometimes you got so excited you forgot which was your left and which was your right. And, of course, you got a real dressing down from your instructor, you know. It was really the real basics to get you in fine shape for when you moved on. That was that.
Did you have physical training?
Yes, you had the gym.
And was that a daily routine again, part of your day?
Yes. You had your ropes to climb on, your wall bars, your other bars. You had your... Is it pommel bars or pommel horses? And then you had the vaults and all that. They were all petty officers that took you there, PTIs, physical training instructors. They were a bit strict, but as I say, it was for your own good.
Was that a morning session, when early in the morning?
Not necessarily, because you couldn't get everyone, every class here at the same. There was 30 classes, so what you missed in the morning, you got in the afternoon, and vice versa. That was actually, it was interesting.
How did you settle into the language? Did they use pretty strong language with the boys?
Not strong as what you learn in the Navy in later years in life. There wasn't much, there was a certain amount of cursing, but not the language that you give and took as years went past, you know. You heard some terrible language, but that was all, not boys, but when you went to sea, but that's another episode in one's life.
Now, you mentioned about going up and over the mast. What was the idea of that?
Well, you've probably seen it on the television where the boys manned the mast. Well, you had to get used to heights, hadn't you? Because you could have been
look out on the ship, you know.
The crow's nest, where you had to learn how to climb up a ladder properly, especially if you were coming out of a whaler. You know, the ladder with the rungs on. Now, a lot of people climb up them like that, but you were taught to climb up sideways. Because if you climb up like that, it swings away from you, backwards and forward. Whereas if you learn to walk up with one rope, you can put your feet and you can climb up without, it won't swing that way. But if you go the other way, it'll swing backwards and forwards all the time, and you can never get the next rung. But if you go sideways to what you were taught, you do it quite agile. Now, that all come in later training when you went to sea. Everything that was done in the boys' training ship was for your own benefit, to learn you how to do the same job under different circumstances when the real thing come at sea.
Take me through this mast climbing activity.
You went... I don't remember what you called the actual parts. You climbed up, and then You went out on the mast because you had the wires coming down, obviously, to hold the mast up. And then the more braver ones went up higher and higher until the boy went right on the top, who you call the button boy. He stood on the button right at the top.
And nothing holding you there as
a
safety.
No. I believe later on in years when they'd done the Royal Tournament, the button boy had a rope in case he slipped. But that was the most dangerous one of them all. But you see, that was in good stead because I went to sea once or twice. I had to climb a mast myself under war conditions. But all this, when you look back at it, when you went to sea, you thought, but that came in handy. Now that I know what it was for, they used to think, what are they teaching me that for? But when you went to sea, you realised what they were teaching you, and it was all for your benefit.
Mm. Was there an element of seeing who were the bravest going up this map? I mean, heights do affect people, and there must be some amongst you who were very reluctant to do it.
Well, like every other walk in life, some people don't like height. Some people don't like depth. But I've never known anyone to say, I can't do it. And they may have showed it, and they may not have liked it. But to the best of my knowledge, I can never remember my time in the boys' training ship of anyone ever refusing to do it. No, I believe the button boy was a Scotch lad, bit of a daredevil, which was typical of him, you know. But I think he would be, I would imagine 50 to 60 feet off the ground. But that was not an everyday occurrence. You know, because they realised that everyone didn't have the same nerve as the boy next to him, you know.
Was it on a drill? Was there a drill to climbing it? You know.
Yes. Oh yes. Uh huh.
Numbers or whatever.
Obviously, the people going to the top went first. Otherwise, they'd be clambering over them that was on the bottom. Obviously, you must start at the top. But then again, in the reverse direction, the bottom come down first, so that the people coming down wouldn't have to climb over the others below them. It's like, we'll say, you have two planes dropping parachutes. You always have the first ones lower than the second one. Otherwise, if it was vice versa, the second one would punch into the parachute as dropping. That was on the same principle. You know, first stop goes to the top, but back down, the bottom comes down first.
Was there a rivalry in who could get the highest amongst you and those that couldn't get quite so high?
No, I wouldn't call it rivalry. I would call it, my nerve won't let me go up there. I think the majority would like to have been on the bottom, you know. This was all, I mean, people must understand, this was all new to us. We'd never known such things as going up heights like that. We probably climbed trees in our youth, but this was a totally, the yardarms from the mast were round, which didn't make it any, but you had the stays to hang on to. The stays, that's the word.
Did they try to push you higher than you felt you wanted to go?
No, I don't think so. No, I think they knew, a lot of these instructors, I think they could tell by your training, he can only go to the second. He'll go to the third, he'll go to the fourth, and I think this little devil will be the button boy, a bit of a daredevil, you know. These instructors, especially the petty officer ones, they seem to sense what you could do and what you couldn't do, what was in you. Of course, dealing with boys for so many years, it was a habit. They knew, they could tell sort of by looking at you whether you would make good or not, sort of thing. I know it sounds silly, but it's quite true in life.
What kind of height did you get on the mast? What was your limit?
At boys' training ship? 15 feet. at sea on a destroyer. What I've been out a few times on the top yard arm on a destroyer getting the signal cleats down 30 feet. That was the limit, 30 feet. Because I was never on a big ship, so I've no idea what it's like on a cruiser or anything like that. As you see then again, that tuning on that mast come in handy in those years to come. When you look back, you think, that was good. It taught me something. I mean, although I was in the signal branch for the most of my life in the Navy, the seamanship that I was taught at the wildfire, and what I learnt when I first went to sea in peacetime, I could have helped on a gun. But if I hadn't had that basic instruction, I wouldn't have known what the hell to do. Excuse the language, you know. But
do you recall who was commanding the wildfire when you were there?
No. The only name I can remember was when I went to the signal school in Chatham. When I'd completed my training, I passed out as top of the class. And you get a wristlet watch for it, you know. And the training commander was a gentleman called Alas Anki. I was just looking at my paper. I could show you some very interesting paper, but that'll come in time. But if you ever wish to come back again. I'm not boring you.
So you don't recall any names of the petty officers?
No.
Or that in the
I couldn't even tell you my instructor's name. Petty officer... No, I can't remember. But at the end of your course, when you went from a boy seaman to boy first class, you clubbed together and you bought your instructor a little present. It was very good actually. I don't remember what it was. I've got a funny feeling it was a cigarette lighter with his initials on, which to us boys was expensive. But he done a damn good job, as I found later on in years. They all done a good job really.
And you were saying that there were no bullies that deliberately went out of the way to make life unpleasant for you.
No. You had the awkward ones. You know, some tried to impose their will on you. But you got to think, no, to hell, he's not going to impose his will on me. So in the end, you were all equal, let's be fair. No, I had no occasions any time in my life in the Royal Navy of any bullying. I'd never heard of it.
Did you make any lasting friendships amongst the boys themselves at this point in time?
Yes. I made a great friendship with that Fred Walters, who was the leader of the class. And in time to come, I'll tell you what developed, how we met again under circumstances you will never believe. Remind me on about that. That will come later on. But as I say, he married my cousin. He was from a seafaring family. His father and brothers were all stewards on the Queen Mary, on the Cunard line. He was from Southampton, and I got him to write to my cousin Betty in Scotland. And then years after the war, just during the war, they got married. And they lived happily until he passed away. She passed away about 5 years ago. I've got his telephone number and the little black box in there in Southampton. Yes, Fred Walters. I only knew him for 3 months at the boys' training ship. He went later on to become a very efficient seaman. And I went into the communication man, so we parted. But the next time we met, you may believe this, but I'm not. Well, that will come later on.
We'll come to that.
It's funny how things turn out in life, you know. How the unexpected brings you together that you don't think would never happen. But that was the only one that I really ever got friendly with. Well, we've only been there 3 months. I didn't get to know them a great deal. I made more friends when I went up to the signal school, because, as you know, the Navy training is strict in peacetime. I think every course, I know the signal course in telegraphers, is at least 9 months.
Well, we'll come to that.
Uh-huh.
When you first went in, were you allowed out at any point, or at what point in time were you allowed out of barracks, out of the ship, or whatever the...
Once you got used to the routine, at night time, there was leave, where you could go into Sheerness town itself. And of course, being 17-year-olds and sailors, you had a pint, you know. But financially, you couldn't afford to go out a great deal, because you only had that 2 shillings to work on. You had enough activity... if you put your mind to it and wish to learn, you could go in at night time. And I used to learn on the... You had a Morse key, but it wasn't Morse like that. It lit the lamp up. And through that, I think I developed a fancy signals.
And you say you went into Sheerness, and was it basically a pint, and that was it, and you were back again? Or
that was it, yes. Because don't forget, Sheerness was like Chatham, a solely naval town. Every other person was a sailor, you know.
Girls in the town?
No, can't.
Young ladies?
That's something I shall... If you ever come back, we can raise that question. This is another thing you will not believe. But, I don't think I ever remembered... speaking to a girl when I was in Sheerness or in Chatham, because, well, Sheerness wasn't so bad, but Chatham, with being a sailor's town, the girls, you know, they were not footloose, but, we wouldn't get into detail about that.
For those first 3 months, you didn't go home on leave, did you? You weren't allowed home at this point.
Well, actually, I wrote home to my mother, saying I was a bit homesick. And she wrote to the commanding officer, I would like John to come home. She may not have bothered, because when all come to all, by the time she'd done it, I'd got settled. Some people never got settled. I don't remember anyone ever running off. But some were unsettled, which that went all through naval life. That's other things that will come as we, if we ever go on and finish the story, you know.
But once you joined and you're amongst people who were very unsettled, there was no way out for them. You know, this wouldn't be their life. So then,
well, I am not quite sure, but I believe in the peacetime Navy. If your parents had money, they could buy you out. I believe it was done in the army early on. But whether the Navy, whether you had a 2 or 6 week settling in period, and you could apply to leave, I'm not sure. But the Navy didn't like you leaving, because it cost a lot of damn money to train anyone in the forces in those days, you know. And they didn't like... I believe, to the best of my knowledge, when I went up to the signal school at Chatham, which may come on, I think it cost, in those days, I'm talking about 1938, about £3,000 to train a signalman, which was a considerable amount of money. And I mean, there was loads of signalmen and seamen and telegraphers. It must have cost the country quite a lot of money. But I don't remember anyone ever being bought out, running off. No, not to my knowledge.
Mail to your family. You were encouraged, I think you said, to write your letters, yeah?
Well, I wouldn't say encouraged. I would say you're more or less committed to write one or two letters a week to your parents or friends and that. Because then again, you see, you never have enough money to buy stamps. So, 2 shillings didn't go very far. I know a stamp was only about one and a half pence or something like that, but out of that you had to buy toothpaste, shaving cream, blades and all that, you know.
Mm. Did your parents send you any money to help you through?
No, they never sent me any money, and I never asked for any money. Because as I remember my father saying, well, you're making your bed, you lie on it. And I'm grateful for that, because it gives you a wrong sense. You know, you could have said, oh, I can send home for a pound or two, which was not fair to anyone. Not even to the men you were living with there. You could say, oh, look what I've got. That didn't wash. It never washed in the Royal Navy, that. I don't think it played a great deal of importance, money. No, no.
And you got mail regularly, obviously, from home.
Oh, yes, I had my mother, my brother, when he thought about it. But all my cousins kept, I had quite a lot of cousins in Scotland, and the old aunties and uncles, and I would think maybe 3 a week, which to me was a lot more than when you couldn't pick your mail up in later years.
Was there a padre on the ship that would look after you and would be available for you?
There was a vicar in the training ship. There was church services in the wildfire for all denominations. Church of Scotland, Methodist, Church of England. I believe the Roman Catholics used to go what we call the shore, outside to the Roman Catholic Church, which I believe that was over the Navy as a whole. They always went to the
local church.
The Roman Catholic, they've got a name for it. I don't know exactly what they call it now. I think that went on in all training establishments, where you had your own padre who you could go to and have a word with in complete confidence. So they told you, which I found it to be true later on in life. Of course, later on in life, you didn't have a padre on board every ship. This will come through time. But the padres are very good. And to the best of my knowledge, they kept all your secrets. I don't think there was... I don't think the padre talked a lot in the wardroom about what he had heard that day. Maybe if he heard something and he could pass it on to your divisional officer to help you through something, he would have done. But I don't think he passed anything confidential on.
Mm. In the evening, after your work was finished, and you were released to go back to your rooms, what kind of thing did you do there?
Well, if you had no letters to write, you had a library. Or you could sit down and speak to somebody, because when a Welshman and a Scotchman comes together, the understanding of the language gets a bit complicated to start with. But you get to know, the only way you'll get to know is by just speaking to them. And then you got to know where they come from, what kind of life they had, and you think, oh, they were either had a better life or a worse life than me. In years to come, helped you once again. Because you got to understand people from different regions. Oh, there was no animosity. One or two would say, oh, you Scottish so-and-so, you know. But you accepted that.